This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman. Summer movies tend to come on strong, at least the trailers, and hype usually shout blockbuster. What can we expect from the films being released this summer? And what is the ultimate summer movie experience? Maybe hitting an IMAX, piling the family in the car, and finding one of the few drive-ins still in operation. Being able to maybe enjoy dinner during a show, or will any multiplex do? Contributing film editor for Cincinnati City Beat and Dayton City Paper, T.T. Stern Enzi, and WVXU entertainment contributor Larry Thomas join me to take a look at what's in store for moviegoers this summer. You can join our conversation. The number is 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. And perhaps tell us what movies you plan to see, or perhaps a movie that you've already seen that maybe you want to see again or want to rave about. And we'd also like to hear from you about how you like to experience summer movies. Gentlemen, thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
And right off the top, Larry and I know each other, and we are the king of one-liners and puns, and we have agreed to a truce so that we don't cost the station its license.
I never agreed to that. All I'll tell you is prepare to duck.
So if we lose the license, it's your fault, not my fault.
You're the host.
Well, let's start out. We were talking off the air. I'm not much of a movie buff.
And we know.
So, but you both are movie buffs. And T.T., I know you're just shaking your head, but
I can't believe this. Really, not at all.
But Larry, let me start with you. Where does your love of movies come from?
I got infected early. I grew up in a family that owned theaters in small towns in West Virginia. So, you know, instead of a playground, I had theaters to play with. So, you know, I read the trade papers. I looked at the ads. I hung out in the projection booth. I watched anything that came along. So that came to me naturally.
And still here in Cincinnati, I think you're involved with scheduling some movies. Or if not, I know at least Lexington that I was reading about.
Yeah, I still do some film programming for theaters. There's one in Lexington. I do the Holiday Drive-In in Hamilton. And some other towns around the country. There's no no restriction on location. So, you know, I do whatever looks good.
T.T., what about you?
Well, I started early as well. I mean, I can remember as a kid, my mother went to the movies quite a bit. And back in the 70s, you know, I remember seeing her album collection, and they were, you know, album covers with the from the soundtracks. And I can remember as a kid thinking, wow, I can't wait to be able to go see those films that, you know. And then next thing you know, as I started growing up and getting a little older, my mother took me to the movies quite often, and that was a treat after school. So that started it for me, ended up always having friends who were in the film, and then eventually I got to the stage where I started just going by myself. I just couldn't get enough of it.
So let's talk about the summer movie season. We'll talk about some specific maybe must-sees or things that you guys might tell folks to avoid. But overall, what kind of summer is it shaping up to be movie-wise?
Well, actually, kind of thin comparatively. I haven't counted up actually on all my available digits to see the exact number. But I have heard a rumor that there's something like 40 fewer films this summer than there were last summer. And a lot of that is kids' films, because they used to turn out a new one every week. And now it's like you're waiting and waiting and waiting for the next one so you can take the kids to the next kid movie.
That's true, but I think you also have an even more alarming number when you think about it, because the summer season actually starts in April now. There used to be a time when summer films and that season started around Memorial Day. But the beginning of April for the last probably 3 to 4 years has been, you know, the real kickoff. And this particular year for us, that was Captain America 2, The Winter Soldier. And unfortunately, yes, if you're right, we have fewer films that are being released, but we have a much larger window of opportunity. So, and again, with the lack of films for families and kids, yeah, it's a very, very thin summer.
But on the exhibitor's side of the coin, having that kind of window is not necessarily a good thing, because if something opens and does not click, like Spider-Man, you're stuck with it for X number of weeks because there's nothing behind it to back it up.
Right, and you're stuck with it on multiple screens.
Yeah.
Is there any reason why that bump up? I would think, you know, the end of May around Memorial Day, you're starting into what is the unofficial start of summer for most people. And is it coincidence that also was when the primetime television season was coming to an end at the end of May?
Yeah, that had a lot to do with it back in the day when TV seasons were more defined than they are now.
Right.
So you said there are 40 fewer films, so there's fewer things for us to talk about compared to years past. So you've been looking, reviewing. What would you say is the summer's must-see film or must-see movies?
Well, in terms of must-see this year, I mean, I feel like, to be quite honest, I started off with Captain America: The Winter Soldier because that's, for me, so thus far, has been the best film of the season. It continued the Marvel run that we have with the Iron Man films, the Thor films, the Avengers, which obviously brought everyone together. But then there was something really interesting about the idea of bringing Captain America into a modern-day world and throwing a little bit of the espionage into it. So it grounded things a little bit. It took away some of the extreme superheroics, focused on the characters a bit more, and delivered a really solid, entertaining experience. And to be quite honest, I really don't feel like we've had much that's come close to that since.
I happen to agree, and I also really gave it extra points for their really good use of Robert Redford in that film.
That is true. He actually, again, that's a great situation for him to come into what is basically a summer blockbuster film and, you know, offer himself up as a showcase like that.
Larry, before we get your summer must-see, on with a new film like you mentioned Captain America, now how long does it play? Or is it still available now? Is it going to be here all summer? I mean, how does that work? On average, how long is it on a screen?
There again, it all depends on how much money it's bringing in or how much the film companies decide before they turn it loose to the discount houses or decide to release it on video. It's everything's variable. There's no set rules.
Right, and you also have to factor in international. The international markets now are also really sort of influencing how long studios keep films here in the States.
Yeah, because the international is, in some aspects, more important than domestic.
Yes.
Okay, so Larry, your summer must-see.
Well, I looked at the list, I made some notes, and based on the trailers that I've seen, there is one movie that I just absolutely cannot wait to see.
And that is?
Lucy.
Oh, okay. Luc Besson.
Luc Besson, a French filmmaker who has done some sensationally good work. Scarlett Johansson plays an unwilling drug mule whose package turns her into a super brain, and she hooks up with Morgan Freeman, who is a brain researcher, trying to figure out what happens if everybody uses 100% of their brain instead of the 10% we do. And it looks like the special effects are spectacular, and I love the cast, and I'm just ready for it. Not to change the subject or anything, but somebody else is ready for it, too, because Universal had it set for August. They moved it up to July.
So it came up a month earlier than it was supposed
to. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So we've done must-sees. What's the ones to avoid? Let's say the
Adam Sandler.
the summer flop. Not fans of Adam Sandler.
Not at all.
No.
And what film's that?
Blended.
So that's one to skip.
That's one to skip, but in some ways I think that's an easy one to skip. That's an easy one to throw out. I would say that for me so far, the film that I've been most disappointed with would probably be Godzilla.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why is it disappointing?
That was the big blockbuster kind of story. Everyone obviously knows the whole Godzilla mythos. We should have been given something else, something more. But beyond the special effects, which were well rendered, and, you know, the sound effects, the score, all of those technical elements are there, but you have nothing in terms of character. And sadly, not much in terms of, you know, real engagement with Godzilla or the monsters either.
Yeah, he doesn't make his first appearance till an hour into the film.
Right.
And even after that, there's like the big fight at the end, and then he's gone again. So it's like, why is this called Godzilla when it's all about all this other stuff? And as T.T. said, it's like not only is the dialogue dull, but the performances are so wooden you'd think it was full of Pinocchios.
We are talking today about summer movies and the summer movie experience. If you have a question or comment, tell us something that you're looking forward to see or how you like to experience the movie, a multiplex or drive-in, 513-419-7100. Again, 513-419-7100. Or talk at WVXU.org. We're talking about, this always comes up, and I've heard this a lot. People say that critics love movies that do poorly, and they hate movies that make big money. And I'm sure since both of you are critics, you've heard this before. Is there any, why is that? Or is there truth to that?
I'm not sure there's exactly any truth to that. In terms of the summer films in particular, I mean, I'm a guy who, for instance, loved Fast Five, which was one of those films that premiered in April a couple of years ago. Mindless entertainment. Did amazingly well at the box office. But, it's again, if I'm entertained, I'm all for it.
Yeah, me too. I like entertaining. I like well done, not necessarily, mind-bending intelligentsia. But it's like we both liked Captain America. I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with a film like that. Not at all.
All right. I would also just point out, too, that I feel like this summer in particular, since we seem to be bashing the multiplex, the big box office kind of stuff, this has actually proven to be a far more interesting summer for the art house side.
Yeah,
it's been a great opportunity. We've had films like Jodorowsky's Dune, Under the Skin, Only Lovers Left Alive, and Ida that have all come out sort of between this April to period where we are right now. And they've been strong, interesting films. So there's a bit of counter-programming that's at play for people who are, again, feeling a little left out by what they're seeing at the multiplexes.
Again, we invite you to join our conversation, 513-419-7100. Joe is calling from Mount Washington. Go ahead, Joe. You're on the air.
Okay. I just mentioned that I just flew back from Asia, and on the plane, I was pleasantly surprised to see the Grand Budapest Hotel, and I love the movie. It starts out as witty and morphs into farce, but it all works. It's smartly written, has a monster cast, and just gorgeous cinematography. So I really loved it, and I'd like to recommend it, and I'd like to know what your guests think of it if they've seen it.
Joe, we appreciate your call. Larry?
I absolutely loved it, too. And in my review, I said it's sort of like having a French art film done by the guys at Mad Magazine. It was that kind of a feeling. And it was just absolutely delicious and delightful and with an incredible cast.
TJ?
And, you know, I'm throwing my support behind that, too. And I think that the more amazing thing is I believe it is still playing in theaters in the area. And it's been out for a while.
Yeah.
Which means that people are really responding to it. So, that's a great example of what I'm talking about in terms of, again, what we can get at the art houses right now.
And the true test of responding is people tell friends, they tell family, they get people to go, they go back with them and see it again. I mean, that really is what makes a hit that runs for a long time.
And we have Jeannie calling from Clifton. Jeannie, go ahead.
Hi. For taking my call. I will comment, Grand Budapest has been playing for over a month at the Esquire Theater in Clifton, by the way. Enjoyed it very much, and it is a visual treat. I was very glad to hear that Luc Besson has a new movie. I'm a huge fan of his from way back with Big Blue. Maybe you all have heard of that film. I hope you have.
I've actually seen it.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
One of my favorite films, actually. I'm also, on July 4th, going to both Lexington and driving to Dayton with a few friends to celebrate the viewing of A Hard Day's Night, the Beatles film, which is showing across the nation. I wish I could go to every venue that is showing it. I've looked online and seen the art houses and galleries and movie theaters that are showing it. It has to be seen on a big screen. I saw it in 1964, and I'm really glad to see it the way it should be seen as other films are, which is in a movie house. And maybe you could comment on that about going to the movie house, not seeing it at home. I love doing that.
Jeannie, thanks. We appreciate your call. What about that, the big screen versus the small screen?
You know, I have to say, in the last couple of years, I've had to kind of step away from that purist attitude that I've had about film. Up until that point, I would have wholeheartedly said that, yes, you definitely always need to go to the theater for that experience. But the reality is the industry's changed. And the fact now that there are, unfortunately, a lot of films that don't end up playing in our area, and we have so many video-on-demand streaming options, Netflix, all those kinds of things that are out there, there are going to be times and situations where you're unfortunately not going to get that big screen experience, but there are still some amazing films that need to be seen. So I would say that if at all possible, always make the theater experience the primary way of seeing film, but don't do so to the extent that you exclude the numerous titles out there that you won't necessarily be able to see on the big screen.
Larry?
Well, if you haven't been pre-reading my review for Sunday, which I'm guessing you haven't, that's pretty much the point of what I was writing about, because I said you should not give up on films just because they're not in a theater. And the film I used as a perfect example is not here. It's on video on demand from the cables and the satellites and whatever. It's The Angriest Man in Brooklyn.
Yes.
Which is a terrific film with a great performance by Robin Williams. It has a great supporting cast. And it was directed by the guy who gave us Field of Dreams. And he hasn't made a film in 12 years. He should be working more often, like today.
Let's get Stephanie from South Lebanon. Stephanie, go ahead.
Hello. I know that you guys like Captain America. I was wondering what you guys felt about Guardians of the Galaxy that's coming out soon. I'm really excited about that movie.
Yeah, that's number two on my hit list. I saw the trailer on that a few times, and it kind of reminded me of Galaxy Quest with Tim Allen. So I'm really willing to give that a shot.
Guardians of the Galaxy?
I am too. Definitely willing to give it a shot. I think for me, outside of, well, there's that film and then Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Those are the two that are upcoming, especially from the bigger studio projects that I would say, yeah, I want to check those out. I want to see what we're going to get.
Stephanie, we appreciate your call. And let's see, we have Melissa from Eden Park. Go ahead, Melissa.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. First of all, I wanted to agree 100% about the Godzilla movie, but you kind of already answered a question I was going to ask if you were looking forward to the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and what you guys think about this new series on, you know, the old movies.
And I think the producer typed it as the New Testament of the old movies.
Yeah.
Nice. I like that.
You know, I the last Planet of the Apes film I enjoyed very much, so I'm not writing this one off. I hope it's
Whoops,
as good
I read
as
it
that.
Wrong. New Treatment of Old Movies.
Oh, not Testament. Oh. Treatment.
Okay. I like the New Testament idea, though.
Yeah, that's a good catch line.
Whoops.
Oh, well. But yes, I'm ready for Planet of the Apes as well.
And we've been talking, what's going to be the movie? You said that there were fewer kids' films this
right.
time. What is then the family movie the summer season?
Well, at the moment, Maleficent is holding the reins as the champ. And before that, it was Frozen, which had a hugely successful run for months. They're hoping that DreamWorks Animation will break their losing streak with How to Train Your Dragon 2. Which opens today.
And that was a feature this morning on Morning Edition.
Oh,
was
okay.
How to Train Your Dragon 2. So.
You know, I don't know why, but I can't get over wanting to call it How to Shave Your Dragon. And I don't know why.
Now, if I were, now we already know that I'm not much of a movie buff, but let's say that I was going to go see How to Train Your Dragon 2. Am I going to be left out if I don't review the first one?
Yes, you will. Yes, so you will. And as a matter of fact, the first film is actually really good. So I have to admit, that's one that I wasn't able to catch at an advanced screening prior to opening. But I'm looking forward to that too, because it was a great great family story, and I think that it seems like they found some really great elements to add to that to, again, hopefully bring in more kids and more adults. So, yes, make the effort to check the first one out.
And to that end, you'll be left out if you don't see any other movies either, because a lot of these films like that are using more and more movie buff references to have something to throw at the adults so that there's something they get and enjoy.
What is there an anatomy for a good blockbuster? Things that you have to, you know, this part, that part, put it together and you can make a blockbuster? Although I would assume if it's that predictable, everyone would be doing it.
If it was that easy, everyone would be doing it. But no, it's like there are so many things that could go wrong and do go wrong. I mean, for example, there was supposed to be a big release in the middle of July of a film called Jupiter Ascending from the Wachowskis, who did the Matrix series. And at the 11th hour, it was pushed back to next January because it's just not going to be ready.
So what about the movie experience? Where's your favorite place to watch? Is it the multiplex? This time of year, we've got drive-ins that are open. It's summertime. I mean, when I was young, it was the drive-in. Now I think you mentioned one, I think, in Hamilton.
Right.
There's one out east in Amelia.
Correct. Those are the only two around here.
So I guess my drive-in options are limited. So, but what's your take on that? What is the best experience?
You know, the funny thing for me is I'm not sure that there is one theater that is necessarily any better than the other for me. I just love that. I love the experience of the theater just in general. I can, literally before coming here, I had a press screening that I went to down in Newport, and I sat in the theater with one other person, you know, the studio rep who happened to be there. I love the theater experience when you go on a, you know, midnight screening and they're 20 people, you know, extra that are crammed into the spot. They're sitting on the steps trying to make sure they get to see that film, and everyone's dying for that experience, whether it's the shock, the thrills, whatever. I love it all. But again, I love that big screen experience. That's always going to be, like, as I mentioned before, that's the primary way of experiencing it.
And I love it when it's done properly, when they give you the best projection, the best light, the best sound without drumming it into your head like you're going to go deaf in the next 10 seconds. I have found, I don't know if it's true everywhere, because lately I've seen the IMAX films at the Levy in Newport, and generally I seem to find that the image looks darker.
Yes, it does.
And it's muddy. But if you go to another screen next door and you see it in 3D in a regular presentation, it's bright, it's crisp, and that's fine. So I don't know what the problem is with that, but it's annoying. The only one I have not had a problem like that was with Gravity. Gravity seemed to look okay, but the other films I've seen over there recently in the IMAX format were just not up to par.
What's the overall, couple things here before we have to wrap up, what's the overall state of the film industry? I mean,
This is Ohio.
You weren't going to do that.
Yes, I did.
Now,
I'm just an innocent bystander on this one.
So I won't let him answer anymore. What's the state of the film industry?
Well, you know, and again, I think we've already hit on some of this right now. I mean, you have, you know, the problem with distribution that, again, you have these blockbuster films that the studios are putting out that will dominate screens in your multiplexes. And unfortunately, if that film does not do well, then, you know, the theater is stuck holding on to a film that it's going to be on multiple screens and they're only going to have a handful of people in those theaters. So no one's getting anything out of that. I think what we will hopefully see in terms of the transition here is, again, like I've mentioned, there are tons of independent films that are out there that are being produced that hopefully maybe more of the exhibitors will sort of, you know, latch on to those and sort of say, well, wait a minute, let's back away from making sure that we have to book, you know, whatever Godzilla 15 as we head down the road and we're going to have to book that on 12 screens out of 12 of our 20 screens. Let's say, like, maybe we'll scale back to 4. And then we'll find, again, some of those other films that we wouldn't necessarily get the chance to see. So we even things out a little bit, and we offer audiences again, a little more variety.
Okay, and there again.
Wait a minute.
Oh.
I said I wasn't going to let you talk anymore. I'll give you one
said
more.
You said you weren't going to ask me anything. You didn't say anything about not talking.
I will give you an opportunity. The state of the film industry. And, yes, I know I'm in Ohio.
Well, and also, in the whole scheme of things, there have been films that are doing well enough in the art houses and the specialty locations that they think they're worthy of putting into the plexes, and they try that on occasion, and sometimes it works. They're doing it now with Belle and Chef. Those are playing in a few plexes around as opposed to just the art houses. But then there are the other ones like The Angriest Man in Brooklyn that will not see the inside of a theater here.
As we wrap up, we said from the beginning I'm not much of a movie fan, so you each have 20 to 30 seconds. Why should I go see a movie this summer? Dead silence.
Well, I can't tell you because there's no steam tractors in them.
You know, I can't tell you because, to be quite honest, I'm not sure that this summer would necessarily be the summer that would draw you in.
This might be the summer to skip.
Yeah,
this might be the one to skip.
Well, happy movie watching, and thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We've been talking with contributing film editor for Cincinnati City Beat and Dayton City Paper, T.T. Stern Enzi, and WVXU entertainment contributor Larry Thomas about summer movies and the movie experience. Coming up after a short break, we're going to celebrate the 35th birthday of the Beast roller coaster at Kings Island. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.